Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. We have all crazy martinis today, and all of them come from the report from Justice Department Inspector General Michael Horowitz. But Jim, it was a crazy day, almost an all crazy day, even before we started talking about martinis. I had two run-ins with government before I even got to work today. Neither of them a police officer, mind you. Still not all that pleasant. This morning, I took my car in for a state inspection, which Virginia requires. That's always aggravated me because Michigan does not require these things. But nonetheless, you got to take it in once a year to make sure you're not some sort of environmental hazard out there. And so while I was waiting, I got a bagel. I texted you about what we might talk about today. I go back up and they said, it's done. Everything was fine. But the only person here who's allowed to put the sticker on your windshield is running a half an hour late. So I got to stick around for a half an hour for that little bit of bureaucracy. And while I was waiting, my wife calls. We got a new deck over the last several days. Very well done. Well put together. The old one was falling apart. It definitely needed to be done. The guys came in and did a fabulous job. We loved everything about it. They were quick. They were efficient. They did excellent craftsmanship, and they were very nice to work with. And so the inspector from the county came by today to look at the deck, told my wife, you know, this thing was built perfectly. It's perfectly safe. But in this one spot, the bolts are supposed to be 18 inches apart, and they're only 17 inches apart. You can totally use it. Everything's fine, but I can't pass your inspection. So that's my morning.
You know, Greg, when you say you had two run-ins with the government before you got to work, I'm thinking speeding ticket, and he decided to rob a convenience store or something like that. I'm trying to think about what would bring you to the two. The inspection sticker, they have two of them in Virginia, right? We've got one for emissions, make sure you're not polluting the environment. The other one is for safety. I'm sure at some point I told you about how I got a ticket for having an expired safety inspection sticker on a car I'd owned for like 5 months. So you have to worry about these cars that are coming right off the line, that they could be dangerous. They could be terribly dangerous. The cop who stopped me, who was very polite and everything, but who was basically, you know, I was like, I could see the gas station. I could throw a stone to the gas station that I could use to get the inspection. And I'm not John Elway. I'm not, you know, throwing this super duper far. And the cop is like, you know, look, I'm going to write you up. But if you point out that you got the car inspected, usually they'll waive the fine. So I go get the inspection and I go to court like 6 weeks later. Like, I usually don't bother. I'm like, you know what? My God, this is a new car. Yes, I should have noticed the sticker was expired, but he could have let me off with a warning. This is, you know, there's no, you know, of course the car, you know, passes inspection with flying colors. There's nothing wrong with a car that I've been driving for 5 months. And of course, so I go in there to the court. Everybody else in the court has got moving violations, right? Going through stop signs, speeding, driving without a license, much more serious stuff. And I'm there with my expired safety inspection sticker on my new car. So I've got the receipt. I'm all there. I'm ready to, you know, point out that I've got, you know, no points on my license. I'm 40 some years old. I have no issues with, you know, no criminal record, one speeding ticket in my entire life. And the judge looks at it and says, did you get the car inspected? Yes, Your Honor. Case dismissed. I had this whole speech ready to go, right? I was already, you know, by golly, we live in a country, you know, in a state that's got murderers and rapists and MS-13 is plaguing the land. And you're coming after me on a sneak speed. But I didn't get to use any of that stuff. Considering my anger, I could have gotten into contempt of court. So probably it's for the best that I didn't end up in this situation. But yeah, Virginia safety. Don't you feel safer this morning, Greg?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'm so glad the state.
Plus, you know, those bolts being 17 inches apart, I mean, the whole thing could explode.
You know? Yes, that was my favorite line. The guy was like, oh, it's perfectly safe, but I can't pass it. All right. Anyway.
So what do you have to do, by the way? Do you have to, like, tear down the whole thing and start over again?
No. The contractor's got to come back and put in another bolt an inch over or something. I don't know. It's pretty minor, but I don't have to take care of it. But anyway, as folks know, I think on a morning when you're getting ready to go on vacation, those are the last things you want to have to deal with. But nonetheless, but I'm sure other parts of our government are functioning just fine. So let's get into our martini.
On the theme of law enforcement not quite living up to expectations.
Yes. All right, the IG report. First one comes to us. This is the Fox News report on this particular story. FBI agent Peter Strzok texted a fellow bureau official in August 2016 that will stop Donald Trump from becoming president. The Justice Department Inspector General reportedly reveals in his highly anticipated report on the Hillary Clinton email case. The Washington Post reported that Inspector General Michael Horowitz's report includes an August 2016 text message exchange between Strzok and then FBI lawyer Lisa Page, who was also his mistress at the time, about Trump's chance of being elected president. "Trump's not ever going to become president, right? Right?" Page texted Strzok. "No. No, he won't. We'll stop it," Strzok responded. Horowitz's review months ago revealed other anti-Trump texts between the two officials who were romantically involved. The "Stop Trump" text goes further and is likely to fuel claims from the White House that the Bureau was working against him. Republican lawmakers pounced on the new text. Louisiana Senator John Kennedy says, "In Louisiana, we call that bias. We don't call that objective." And Trey Gowdy, head of the House Oversight Committee, says Peter Strzok's manifest bias trending toward animus casts a pall on this investigation. And oh, by the way, for some reason, that particular text was redacted from information given to Congress. Nonetheless, according to Bloomberg News, as we reported yesterday, Horowitz's report says investigators, quote, did not find documentary or testimonial evidence in the case that improper considerations, including political bias, directly affected the specific investigative actions we reviewed. So, Jim, I'm not sure what it takes to be considered having a political bias in this case, but what do you make of this one?
If you go through the text, you can find lots of cases where the inspector general concludes, "We did not find evidence that that bias directly affected the decision making of the case." And what this, and they go through this for just about every major or even a bunch of minor decisions made by every figure involved in the investigation of Hillary Clinton. But when they say that, you got to look at each particular word in there that directly affected and things like that. Look, my understanding is the inspector general has to be very careful about the kinds of accusations they put in a report. If you can't prove it, meaning someone literally writing down, "I am making this decision out of political bias," you really can't, you know, make that kind of a charge because you don't know what's going on inside somebody's head. Having said that, there is one point where they say that Strzok's text of "we will stop him," as well as the other ones disparaging Trump, quote, "is not only indicative of a biased state of mind, but even more seriously implies a willingness to take official action to impact the presidential candidate's electoral prospects." Now, as I write in today's Morning Jolt, Greg, that's about as harsh as an inspector general can possibly get. In federal bureaucratese, that has burned him at the stake. So once you filter it for the vetted by lawyers, don't want to get out ahead of your skis, be very, very careful, dry, bureaucratic language, this is still a pretty devastating report. And what's more is if you wanted to say, okay, it's the two lovebirds in their texts, you know, that's bad enough. What's really kind of untroubling is that you see this in multiple FBI officials. Not all of them are named. And there's one that says, you know, referring to him as Donald Trump. September 9th, 2016, this agent says something along the lines of, "I would rather have brunch with Trump and a bunch of his supporters, like the ones from Ohio that are retarded." Now, of course, they're like, "Well, we didn't think, you know." And by the way, those exact agents later told the IG, "Well, look, I don't think my political or personal views affected the integrity of the investigation. I'm running around saying that only retarded people would vote for this guy, but it didn't affect my thinking at all."
Right.
I mean, it's one thing. Look, we know people at the FBI, you know, they can read a paper just like everybody else. They can be interested in politics as much as anybody else. They vote. They effectively work for the president. They're accountable to Congress. It's not surprising they'd have political views. And this in and of itself is not really scandalous or a problem. But once you get to the point of expressions of bristling contempt that anyone who disagrees with your political preference is retarded, I do not trust you to have this kind of extraordinarily strong, impassionate political view not affecting your judgment or decision making. And just one other thing I would throw in there, which I didn't see referred to in the IG report, but I thought was kind of revealing. Comey talks about in his book, this meeting, it's October 2016. They've come across the emails on Anthony Weiner's laptop. And then they're discussing that we got to tell Congress. I promised Congress I was going to tell you this. And he doesn't say who. He says an FBI lawyer. And the more I think about it, we don't know this for this lawyer is not identified. All we have is Comey's account to go on. But boy, you certainly wonder if that's Lisa Page. That this lawyer says, "Should you consider that what you're about to do may help elect Donald Trump president?" And later on, you know, and Comey thinks for a second. And he says, it's a great question, but not for a moment can I consider it, because down that path lies the death of the FBI, et cetera. I'm like, look, no, it's not a great question. That's a terrible question, because you're basically saying, look, I know you promised Congress you were going under oath that you would keep them informed, but this might help Trump, so maybe you shouldn't do that. I mean, it's basically saying, well, as the FBI, we should be an extension of the Hillary Clinton campaign. We should suppress information that might hurt her, which is, again, once you reach that point, you can't trust the FBI. So my conclusion of yesterday was, this is a bad report for, obviously, Jim Comey. Oh, by the way, he uses private email for his official work. That doesn't, you know, gee, I can't imagine why he'd be reluctant to go after Hillary on this. Obviously, bad for Loretta Lynch, bad for the Lovebirds. But I think also, I think bad for America, like bad for all of us who want to trust the FBI and who look at this. And it sounds not all that far removed from a Daily Coast comment section, which is, you know, not the kind of attitudes and mentality and just kind of open expression of, you know, naked political partisanship. No pun intended, although I guess in the case of the Lovebirds, maybe that applies. That's not what you want to see in your country's preeminent law enforcement organization.
But don't worry, Jim. Current FBI Director Chris Wray is going to have everybody go through bias training or something. So I'm sure everything's going to turn out fine in the next investigation. Let's move on to the second crazy martini here, also from Fox News, also again from the IG report. Numerous FBI employees accepted inappropriate gifts from reporters and routinely spoke to media outlets without authorization during the Hillary Clinton email probe, the Justice Department's watchdog revealed in Thursday's report. The shocking revelation came just a week after the former security director for the Senate Intelligence Committee, who was in charge of maintaining all classified information from the executive office to the committee, was indicted for allegedly giving false statements to FBI agents looking into possible leaks to reporters. Quote, we identified instances where FBI employees improperly received benefits from reporters, including tickets to sporting events, golf outings, drinks and meals, and admittance to non-public social events, reads the report. The gifts were outside the scope of the Clinton email investigation, so those are going to be looked at separately. So, Jim, this is the same week, and the story just referred to this as the Wolf Watkins tryst for that lasted for a while. So when people say that the politicians are in bed with the media, they're not kidding here.
Greg, I guess I understand why nobody returns my phone calls these days. I'm not doing the Watley approach or buying them Redskins tickets or anything fancy like that. It's not unheard of for reporters to buy a cup of coffee for a source or something like that. Maybe even pick up the check if you're doing something like that. The general sense is the smaller the expense, the less trouble it is. If you're giving your sources gifts, some sort of financial or other, you know, thing of value, reporters traditionally have not been willing to pay for stories. The National Enquirer does stuff like that. But there's always the impression, the fear that once you start doing that, will people start telling you what you want to hear, things that may or may not be so accurate, in exchange for the gift or for the money or something like that. But basically, you give everyone reason to be wary about the validity of your sources and how credible your sources are. As other folks have pointed out, if you're at the FBI and you're going and meeting with a reporter and the reporter says, hey, you want Redskins tickets or, you know, some other great fan, hey, here's a Rolex, something like that. Well, what you have that is of value to the reporter is government property, government information, right? Here's how the investigation going. Here's what we found. Besides the fact this stuff might be classified, this stuff might be secret, you have sworn an oath to not spread this stuff around. This stuff that, you know, protecting this information is part of your job. And so when you're trading it for gifts, you're basically taking bribes. You know, it may not be literal money. And like I said, the information may not be officially classified. It might just be sensitive or something like that. But everybody who works at the FBI needs to be able to trust each other. And if everybody's running off to reporters and trading what they know or what happened in the morning meeting in exchange for a fancy dinner or something like that, you can't have a well-functioning organization. There are a lot of times where the rhetoric about the swamp of D.C., and all, you know, journalists are you know, scum-sucking, bottom-dwelling leeches, et cetera, et cetera. Look, stuff like this only adds fuel to that fire. And I don't think it's outrageous to wonder, certainly know who the FBI officials are, because like I said, what they're doing here is, if not literal bribery, getting awfully close to it, certainly an abuse of power, certainly an abuse of their authority, abusing their access to information that is sensitive. And I'd kind of like to know who the reporters are, because I'd be interested to know who's a really good reporter and who's able to get access to this information through other means, including ones that are in the profession or considered unethical.
Wow. Not a good week for the media, but we could say that almost every week.
When is it a good week for the media, Greg?
Yes, exactly. All right. Well, let's wrap up with our third crazy martini. And for that, we need to focus on the Boy Scout. James Comey. This is the Washington Examiner. Former FBI Director James Comey admitted to the Justice Department's Inspector General that he initially forgot that Anthony Weiner was married to Hillary Clinton aide Huma Abedin. In late 2016, the FBI realized that some of Clinton's emails made their way onto Abedin's laptop at the home that she shared with her husband. Then Deputy Director Andrew McCabe thought that discovery was a big deal, in part because it may have showed how classified emails might have been sent to a private, non-government computer. But Comey indicated it didn't register with him why this news would be important. Quote, Comey said that he recalled first learning about the additional emails on the Weiner laptop at some point in early 2016. Although he said it was possible this could have occurred in late September 2016, the IG report said. Comey told the Office of Inspector General that this information didn't index with him, Jim, which he attributed to the way the information was presented to him and the fact that, quote, I don't know that I knew that Weiner was married to Huma Abedin at the time. So, Jim, first of all, Jim Comey doesn't apparently pay much attention to anything, considering that Huma Abedin was obviously a critical figure, or should have been, in the Hillary Clinton investigation. So you'd think he'd know a little bit about her by then. Secondly, if he didn't know that, wouldn't he be even more curious as to why Hillary Clinton's emails are on Anthony Weiner's laptop?
I kind of wish I were one of the investigators working for the FBI Inspector General conducting that interview, because you just, one, you'd love to see their reaction to the claim that, oh, I didn't know Weiner and Abedin were married. Because just the level of, really? Really? I put yesterday, one of my favorite graphics to put up is the Keyshawn Johnson NFL Live on ESPN. Come on, man. You know, when somebody really offers you something truly implausible, truly, come on, man. Don't tell me you didn't know this. By the way, I also want to preserve, you've really worked in government for a long time when you start using index as a verb. Oh, I didn't index that. But getting back to that point, Greg, did we fail to discuss the Abedin Weiner scandal? Is Anthony Weiner an obscure figure in American politics?
Such a quiet private marriage. Yeah, nobody ever talked about it.
If there had been one really bad sexting scandal in 2011, and then he'd faded into obscurity, somebody's in the news and get 15 minutes of fame and then they go away. But the whole thing that made it creepy and weird was that Anthony Weiner wouldn't go away. He ran for mayor again in 2013, and oh, by the way, was doing the same thing all over again. And that's what ended that mayoral bid. Maybe it says something about the conservative waters that you and I swim in, but I would say the, dear God, what does she see in him? Why are they still married? Why won't he just go away? Coverage was pretty good. Yeah, these are not obscure figures. And it was Dave Weigel, the Washington Post, who had written something who said, there's a lot of profile pieces that have been written about Huma Abedin as this remarkable figure and Hillary's right-hand woman and all kinds of stuff. And he basically wrote a very, contrary to conventional wisdom piece. He said, so she's a really good staff aide. What makes her so, stand out or unique? And the idea that a lot of these glowing profiles that were being written were basically source greasers, right? You write a nice piece about Huma Abedin so that later on she'll answer your phone calls or talk to you or something like that. All of this escaped James Comey's attention? All of the entire thing until 2016. I mean, maybe Loretta Lynch was right. Maybe it's not really the Federal Bureau of Investigation, the Federal Bureau of Matter.
He got busted that year. He's in prison now.
That's right.
I don't remember when he got charged exactly, but the fact that he had been in touch with that's a bad euphemism, but the fact that he had been in touch with underage girls, that fact was out well before the last month of the campaign.
Yeah, I mean, congressmen texting teenagers, that stands out. Even in a corrupt world, even in a world full of scandal, that one kind of sticks with you. This all assumes that Comey's telling the truth. If he's, lying, then he's lying to an FBI inspector general. And, that just doesn't, one, it blows up his, honest, true, good guy image here. And it just, again, it's very tough to read I'm sure there are a lot of good FBI agents still, walking the beat, still doing their job, still trying to catch bad guys. But man, that is just a, just an ugly, ugly portrait of the organization painted by that IG report yesterday.
Can't you just imagine kind of the smug response to that question? And Jim Comey in his classic declarative sentence phrased as a question response to that. So did you know that Humedin and Weiner were married? I don't think so. He does that all the time.
Assuming they're not doing the kind of chant that the refs, that the crowds make when they don't like the refs call at the basketball game of bubbly, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Just the I believe it was, you know, it might have been Seth Meyers or Amy Poehler on Saturday Night Live used to do. Really? Really? Just endless repeating of the word really in ever more skeptical tones. And just keep hitting him with that. Really? That none of that, you know, the whole Breitbart hijacking the press conference, all that escaped your, because it was kind of a big deal. It was you know, fantastic political theater. And the other thing is, you know, also remember, everybody, the reputation of Comey was that as much as he saw himself as a Boy Scout and straight arrow and you know, the last honest man in Washington, that he was very aware of internal politics, external politics. He knew exactly, you know, which egos to massage and all that kind of stuff. That he was a very political creature throughout his career at the FBI, going back to the Bush years and all that stuff. So the idea that he didn't know Hillary's most trusted aide was married to a congressman and they'd had these giant scandals, really? I don't know about you, Greg. I'm ready to go on vacation.
I've never had a better lead into vacation. The fact the FBI had the computer was because of the investigation into Weiner. Oh, my gosh. Anyway, Jim, time for vacation. Have a great one. I certainly plan to have a good one for our family. We'll reconvene on the 25th. See you then.
See you on the 25th, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. As we mentioned yesterday, Jim and I both on vacation next week. The first 3 days will be best of editions of the Three Martini Lunch, and then new editions with guest hosts on Thursday and Friday. So tune in all next week for the Three Martini Lunch.